This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Christy Landwehr from Aurora, Colorado, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for this September 20th, 2016, episode 1523. This episode is brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association. Good morning, horse world.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Here's a safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Missed it by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Tuesday morning. We appreciate you being here. Christy is back. I think we're in our third year doing this now. Christy, it's good to see you. And now we've officially met.
We have officially met.
We've been doing this show a long time. We've known each other forever. And I never met Christy in person. So Jennifer and I got to meet. We'll talk a little bit more about what fun we had out there in Colorado hanging out with you. Coming up on the show later today. And today's all about what? Well, let's find out from Jennifer.
Coming up on today's CHA edition, it's a three-beat Tuesday as we tackle the counter canter, what it is and why it's relevant. And guests Julie Goodnight and Lori Hall McNary are going to help us out with that. And Christy also has the latest goings on at the Certified Horsemanship Association. So stay tuned for the parade, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. And before we get on with the show, I have a special listener Daily Whinny today. This Daily Whinny comes from our brand new auditor, Marissa Kreidler. Hope I said that right, Marissa. She wanted to give a Daily Whinny out to her best friend and another auditor, Jessica Troop. Jessica rode on a cross-country course for the first time ever on Friday. Marissa said they were out schooling and that Jessica rocked it. So good job, girl. We're so proud of you. You know, I'm sure I've never done it, but I'm sure it's very exciting to get out on your first cross-country course. We were together watching cross-country, Christy, over the weekend, so it's all relevant. But Jessica, good job. And Marissa, thank you so much for becoming an auditor. We appreciate all of our auditors, and it's always exciting when we get new ones. Well, now, we were out watching cross country. We had a little get-together with some of the listeners at the Colorado Horse Park over the weekend. And what a beautiful place that is with the mountains in the background. And you can see so many of the jumps, too. Oh, did we lose her?
Uh-oh.
We lost Christy.
Christy's gone?
Is this like yesterday? Christy, are you back?
Just like yesterday.
She's showing this is just like yesterday. We apologize to everybody for yesterday when we had so much trouble. But maybe Christy's computer is updating. I don't know. That's the problem we had with Jamie all day yesterday.
Mystery.
And we're going to try and get Christy back here again. You know,
in the meanwhile,
yes, she is showing not online, so I don't know what's going on.
That's a bad sign. Maybe we'll have to call her on her phone at the Colorado Horse Park at our Horses in the Morning Horse Radio Network a listener meetup. It was really kind of fun. We had never been to the Colorado Horse Park before, and the way it's laid out, you could probably see between 6 and 12 of the jumps. From the tent, which was lovely. They had a tent there that you could hang out in the shade and sit at a picnic table and eat some lunch from one of the vendors. And they also had some bleachers out. So we could see one of the water jumps, and they had a really interesting downhill combination that we could see. And there was a coffin jump out there, and then a couple of other just standalone gimme fences. And you could even look all the way down the hill and see the start box. So it was really enjoyable. And we stood up there for quite some time and watched, and it got a little breezy in the afternoon, being Colorado and all. And that was kind of fun for Glenn and I, because here in Ocala, Florida, we don't get a lot of wind. It's pretty still here. And standing up on the top of that hill in the sunshine and the wind, we felt kind of crispy by the end of the day. But it was great fun, and we enjoyed it immensely. And it motivated me to get home here and hop up on my horse and see if we can't figure out how to get over some fences. So yesterday afternoon, when the heat died down just a little bit, about 6 o'clock in the evening, I took Nigel out and we did some more ground pole work. And I'm pleased to announce that at last we have reached a 70% success rate in walking over ground poles. He doesn't knock them off the ground, the ground pole holders.
Yeah, he's a bit of a klutz. He's always been a bit of a klutz since you got him. And I am not seeing Kristen.
I think it's a motivation thing. You know, he bumps into him. He's like, well, they fall down. Why should I work any harder than that? You know? Maybe I need heavier rails.
All right. We're going to try and add Christy back in on her phone. This is 2 days in a row now that we've had problems with the co-hosts. They're going to hear the phone ringing. We've had problems with the co-hosts and their connections. And it's not us this time. It's not us. In
Hello?
Are you here?
I am.
We appear to have lost you. Is your computer doing updates?
No, it was all fine. It just said, call, drop, trying to call back in.
Yeah, you're going to have to reboot your Skype, I think, because we cannot get you back. You're showing offline, actually. So anyway,
okay, wanted to do it via the phone?
Oh, we'll have to, because we've been just here chatting. Jennifer's been entertaining everybody while we were waiting. So,
okay, great.
So congratulations to Auditor Jessica Troop on her first cross country course. And we were just chatting about how we were hanging out at the Colorado Horse Park and how we could see everything. And it was actually a cool place to watch cross country. That was fun.
Very fun. It was very open. And I'll tell you, cross country is an absolutely great time.
Yes.
Go and do for the first time. You feel, as Jen well knows, a little bit like, oh my gosh, so much freedom. I'm outside of the arena walls.
Right, exactly. And it's a little scary too. And it was a little scary watching some of the lower level riders ride too. We were all shuddering a little bit at some of the out of control ones. But for the most part, it was pretty good. And then also, we haven't talked about this. We got to meet you the weekend before at WESA, which is the Western English Sales Association.
It is.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, what was so funny to me is, of course, we all know what we look alike. It looks like because of Facebook and everything else these days. But so we see each other from across a crowded room. We walk over to each other. And the first words out of your mouth, Glenn, were, hey, you're my tallest host.
Yes, that's true, too. You are. I was surprised, actually. I didn't picture you being that tall. But we had fun there.
Well, that's true, because you don't really know height when you see a photo, right? Unless I'm standing next to an elephant or something, I guess. Well, then you would know height.
That's right.
Not quite that tall.
And do you know, the WESA is interesting. We've listeners know we've been going to ADA for, well, I think this is going to be our 14th time coming up. And ADA is a little different because it's one big room, and there's about, I'd say, 200 to 300 vendors there, but it's mostly English. So when we go out to WESA, which is mostly a Western trade show, wholesalers meet retailers, and apparently this one's kind of quiet. It was very quiet. The one in the summer is very quiet, and the one in January is huge, which you think would be the opposite in Denver, Colorado. But the thing about this one is it's in a kind of a permanent building, so the building is huge. There's four stories. There must be hundreds of stores in there. And I did not know that there were that many cowboy boots and cowboy hats in the world. Oh, my God.
There's
a lot of people who make cowboy boots.
There's a lot.
Tons of them.
And in January, it's National Western Stock Show time. So they do it so that, you know, people can be a part of both events. Oh. And it's like right up the road from each other. And it's so funny because that building that you mentioned, Glenn, is actually so getting so to the point where it needs a little bit of a remodel, that there's a person that sits at the base of all the escalators and says, leave two steps in between or the escalator will stop. Thank you. all day long.
There's too much weight on it. It'll stop. Too many cowboys on the escalator will stop it.
Yes. Too many of those boots.
And belt buckles. Oh, my God. There are also a lot of belt buckles in the world. I was shocked at the number of belt buckles. I need to get a Horse Radio Network with our logo belt buckle made. What do you think?
Ooh, I think that'd be cool.
That'd be fun. We did it. We actually did meet some fun people that do some interesting artwork that we're taking a look at for your group and ours that we met at the Colorado Horse Park. That was worth going just to meet those two. So that we'll talk more about that as we get that all arranged. But we'll have new options for swag. Let's put it that way. And now you also went to a workshop, right? Or there was a skills workshop?
Yes.
Yeah.
So right after I saw you two at WESA, I just kept heading north on I-25, and I got all the way to Cheyenne. And right across the border in Wyoming is this wonderful college called Laramie County Community College. And Lene McDonald runs the program. And oh my goodness, her students and her horses are fabulous. So incredibly well turned out and ready to do our event. We had a Region 9 conference on the one day where we had all kinds of speakers talking about equine law and talking about risk management and teaching techniques and learning styles and things like that. And then on the Sunday, actually 40 people were there, and we were able to let them teach. People role played for each other at the age group and level of which they were teaching. And then we could evaluate them afterwards in a very safe, non-certification environment to let them know things that they do great as a riding instructor and things that they can improve upon. And the big one, Glenn and Jen, is voice projection. You know, when you've never taught in an arena before and now you're in a very large indoor that has stands and we don't allow you a microphone, because we want to hear you use your diaphragm. Oh boy, your voice gets lost. So we were doing a lot of, and you got to speak like this, and showing them how to speak. And they just look at us like, oh, you ladies are really frightening. You're really loud. But it was good.
That's
very
why
good time.
First time I went to audition at the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair, they picked me. The reason I got to be town crier is I was the loudest one. So I get it. I understand that. That's why I was town crier, is because from one end of the fair to the other, you could hear me. And I think I was the only one. So that's why I got that job, because I was loud.
Glenn, I'm happy. This means that I have a future job as a town crier at fairs in case this gig doesn't work.
That's right. That's right. By the way, that pays a lot. Let me just tell you, you can make a living doing that. But that's how I met Jennifer. I got 30 years of happiness out of doing that. That's how I met Jennifer.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So, yeah, I understand projection. And, you know, it is true, because how many times have you been in a ring and you can't hear the instructor? And you know when that especially is true is when you're in the warm-up ring for a show and there's 12 people in there and three instructors.
Yeah.
Then you've got, you know, you're competing with everybody else at that point.
Absolutely.
I never thought about actually teaching that. So...
No, we do. We talk a lot about diaphragm. We talk where to put your hand to hear it resonate and all of those kinds of things. We actually talk about breathing because, you know, if you take little short, shallow breaths, your voice gets higher, and higher pitched voices are sometimes harder to hear. And then, of course, the people that talk so fast that the poor rider's going, I didn't get any of that. I'm riding a 1,000-pound animal. I'm trying to just figure this all out, and I don't even hear you, so I'm just going to shut you off entirely.
Yeah.
And then the funny thing is, on the opposite end of the spectrum is the person whose voice is fabulous, but we never get to hear it because there's a whole lot of dead air time where they just like watch the person ride. So we do a lot of, you've got to constantly coach, because people are only really listening to about maybe 60% of what you're saying when they're sitting again on an animal and trying to understand what you're saying, and there's that little bit of maybe fear going on or excitement going on or whatever's going on. They're tuning out a lot of what's going on, so you've got to repeat.
Now, Christy, while we're chatting here, why don't you go ahead and reboot your computer and get Skype up again, and we'll see if we can get you back on there while we're chatting. I think that might solve the issue. You know, it's
you are requiring me, Glenn, to multitask.
Yes,
and
yes.
Even though I'm a woman, you're requiring me to multitask in a tech environment. I don't know about this. All right. I will try.
Yeah. Reboot
Keep coaching, Glenn.
We had this problem.
Encouraging words.
That's right. I can speak in my outdoor voice if you'd like.
That would be frightening.
We had this problem yesterday, too, which is we were joking when you went away because Jamie's computer decided to do an update right at before the show started, and it took almost an hour. So she was on the phone, and her phone connection was much worse than yours. Yours is pretty good, actually. Now, you also have your conference coming up, and I'm kind of bummed that we can't make it because it sounds like fun. That's it's in one of our favorite places. We love Tennessee.
Oh, we're so excited about it. And I'll tell you what's neat is with all the different things we're doing as far as all the education. It's called Real Colors, and it's a personality style inventory. Much like Myers-Briggs, except instead of letters, it's with colors, and you're one of four colors, you're a combination. You're either orange, gold, blue, or green, or a combination of those. And Ann Brzezicki, who runs Middle Tennessee State University's horsemanship program, and myself both got certified a few months ago out here in Denver. We had a great time with that. I think it was a 3-day certification. So we're going to be doing that on Thursday night. And what's so neat about Ann, and I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show before, is she runs an intercollegiate program. So you only get that one circle after you draw a horse's name out of the hat to prepare that, know that horse to then go jump or to go ahead and go do a reining pattern. So what's great about this is that they've gotten so good at the colors on her team that they all know what each other is as humans, but they also know what the horses are. So she can say during the preparatory circle of a horse that somebody's never ridden from another school, hey, you're on an orange horse. And then that young lady knows, oh, this horse is going to have some energy and some get up and go. I need to sit back. I need to check release before my fences. Away we go. And so they understand kind of based on color. And I guess their team scores have gone up drastically. So we're excited that we just added that training for people that want it. So we've done some fun stuff like that this year.
That's interesting because that's a lot like the Chinese five elements. Because everybody is one of those elements, and that kind of determines, you know, what if you're a fire, should you be with a water horse, and you know that kind of thing. So we talk a lot about that with Dr. Wendy, who does traditional Chinese medicine, and that goes along the same lines. Basically, you're just using colors, which might be a little easier to remember than the elements. But that dates back thousands of years.
Well, I have a good story for one of our guests today. Since we're going to have Julie Goodnight on, I can go ahead and share this story. I think she'll be all right with it. So,
too late now, Julie. We're sharing it anyway.
Here we go. We went to she went to a training once with her husband, who used to be the CEO of Monarch Ski Resort, Rich. And he had a training, and it was also based on personality, but you're an animal. So you're either a lion or a St. Bernard or a monkey or a fox. And so you're one of these. And so you have to, first of all, after you got the description of what each of those was, go and stand under that animal. So Julie goes walking on over to the St. Bernard. She's like, oh, I'm like the St. Bernard. I care for others. I want to give them the whiskey when they're down and they're cold in the snow. I want to rescue them. I want to teach them how to do stuff like ski and horseback ride. I'm definitely under here under the St. Bernard. So then they were told, all right, everyone that you came with, your spouses and your friends and things, now go and put the person under who they really are in your mind, what animal, or leave them where they are if they chose correctly. So her husband and her friends go marching over to her and push her under the lion, who is really kind of like, go for it, a little bit aggressive, a little bit assertive. And she's like, what? I'm the lion? And she said it was such an eye-opening experience for her. Well, I had done numerous CHA clinics with her as a clinician up to this point where we're certifying instructors. And we always say one of the clinicians ends up being good cop for all 10 participants that they feel like they can go to and say, oh, the other one's really intimidating. And most of the time when we do these clinics, I tend to be bad cop. When I'm with Julie, I'm always good cop. So she is the lion. I think it's great. So we had a great time with that story.
Well,
so
you know,
funny.
We all do see ourselves differently sometimes than others sees us, right? I mean,
yes.
And Julie, I've met her, and we've known her since the beginning of the Horse Radio Network, and I'd put her under the lion. Just because you can't have a successful TV show for that long and not be a lion.
There you go.
Right?
I mean,
if she was a St. Bernard, I don't know, the TV show still wouldn't be on, because you really have to make that happen. That's something you got to push and make happen. We were supposed to meet with her when we were out. We were supposed to stay at her place when we were out in Colorado, actually. We had set it all up for the one Saturday night. We were going to come out and see her place and stay there. And then it turned out that she had to film in Florida, of all places, right down the road from us. So we were out there by her house. She was over here by our house. So we never got to see her.
Doesn't that figure, though, right?
Yeah.
That figure.
Yep. It's just, well, now, so the conference is coming up. You have a code, right? And tell people a little bit more about if they want to attend, if you're anywhere around Tennessee and any of the surrounding states and can get there, it'd be worth checking out.
Yes, absolutely. And especially you can only come if you want to just for a day. You don't have to come to the entire thing. But if you put HRN for Horse Radio Network on our website, or when you call us, just go ahead and say that, and you can get in at the CHA member discount, which is, I think, $100 less for the whole thing. And so it actually is a very good savings. And our conference includes being able to ride in a session, so you can possibly ride with Julie on a school horse provided by MTSU, because she's one of our keynoters, or ride a reiner. We're going to have NRHA there, National Reining Horse Association, to do that.
Oh, that's always fun to see the English riders ride a reiner, too. That's always
very entertaining.
Yeah, that's very entertaining when they go to the sliding stop and don't put their feet out. And
yeah.
That's always fun.
And I'll tell you what's funny too about us English riders, since I have a tendency to do both, but I probably lean a little bit more in that direction, is when we try to ride a cutter for the first time and we're young and in our 20s and we think, I'm not going to push on that saddle horn. I jump without my stirrup. I am not doing that. And then the very, very first time the horse cuts the flag, oh, guess who's holding on to the horn? Oh, yeah.
You know, those stops and turns and jumps to the side, they'll make you honest every time.
They sure will. The horse is going to be way better reactive than you are. Trust me, you are not going to know which way the flag's going to go, or the cow. The horse does.
Yeah,
the horse knows it instant before you every single time.
Yep. I bet you a lot of English riders come out of the saddle on those when they do that for the first time. All right. So this
very
is,
please come.
Give the dates and where to find it again.
Yes, it is October 19th through the 23rd, and it's going to be in Murfreesboro, Tennessee at the Miller Coliseum and the Horse Science Department at Middle Tennessee State University, which is about 45 minutes from Nashville. And if you go to our website, just chainstructors.com, we'll get you there. Go under conference and then go on to online registration and put in HRN as the code. You will be coming as our CHA member rate.
Very good. And also some webinars coming up.
Yes, and we have quite a few of these too that I just wanted to mention to folks, because sometimes we really cannot leave. We maybe don't have someone that we trust to stay at our farm to take care of our animals. And so it's hard to get to clinics and it's hard to do those kinds of things. So our webinars are an hour to an hour and a half long, and they're PowerPoint presentations and videos and things that are being done by professionals on many, many different topics. So you can stay at home, watch your animals out of your window, and be educated on all kinds of topics. It's not just for instructors. It's not just for the equine professional. It's for everyone who loves a horse, is just thinking about getting a horse, just bought a horse. So come one, come all. We have probably, 40 topics on there right now that you can click on the link and find out more about the speaker's bio and their topic, and then be able to watch it from the comfort of your home.
Now, one of the things, while we're waiting for Julie here, one of the things that we were warned about before we made our 10 days to Colorado for the first time was, the height, obviously, is you're at a much higher elevation, and some people do have problems with dizziness and breathing and everything else. And, you and I were talking a little bit about that when it comes to the horses. So what do you do for horses that are coming into Colorado for the first time to show? Let's say they're coming up from Phoenix, and, Phoenix is not certainly 1 mile up. And then, of course, if you're taking your horses into the mountains and you're riding in the mountains, that's even worse, because now instead of 7,000 feet, you may be getting up to 8,000 or 9,000 feet. So is there anything you do to help them?
Well, I'll tell you, the first thing is they say 2 weeks to acclimate. And I know a lot of us don't have time for something like that, but a lot of times your horses might go ahead to the horse show with your trainer and then you show up later. Though you're also going to be out of breath if you don't have that 2 weeks, but those are definitely about 2 weeks you are going to be acclimated. So that is something to think about. And then as far as going up into the mountains, I'll tell you, just don't expect the same level of performance that your horse can do at sea level, because they really will be gasping for air a little bit more. So just understand and appreciate you don't want to push them beyond their limits, because azuria, which is tying up disease, they used to call it Monday morning sickness, where people would ride really hard on the weekend and then Monday morning the horse would be, oh. That happens quite a bit here in Colorado to horses that come in from out of state and they're driving in from Kansas, going to go camp in the mountains, and they know that at home they can ride easily 5 to 10 miles a day. They try to do that up in the mountains, and their poor horses go home on Monday morning not feeling really good. So that's some things to just be aware of. And lots of water for both the human and the horse. We've got to have lots and lots of water here. Even on the really cold, wintry days, and we don't feel like drinking cold water, make it lukewarm, because you really... water is so huge.
You know, you've told us that. And of course, I drink a lot of water here in Florida anyway, because it's just so hot. But we must have went through 3 cases of water in 10 days. Yes. You were right. I mean, you're just thirsty all the time because it's so dry. We're used to it being humid. So it's a whole different thing. So yeah, so water was a big thing. We also tried, and I don't know if this had anything to do, the one listener, Jera, who you met, who came up from New Mexico, said every time somebody comes to visit her, and she's at a high elevation too, everybody that comes to visit her, she has them use this product called Cell Power. And we bought it on Amazon. It's a little bottle of drops. And you put it in your drinks about 3 or 4 days before we headed out, and then you use it every day. We didn't have any trouble at all. I don't know if Cell Power had anything to do with it, but we weren't getting, you know, we weren't having any trouble. So we kept using it during the trip. But I don't know if it worked or not. It's supposed to oxygenate your blood. It's supposed to help with that. And maybe it worked. Maybe it didn't. I don't know. See, that's the problem with some supplements is you don't know. You just don't know whether you would have not.
You can do a test group. You can come back to Colorado and not take it and see if it makes you feel any different.
Yeah,
then I'll give you a second trip.
We would love to come back. You know, we would love to come back to Colorado. It was beautiful. We would definitely come back. And we came, and I think the fall was a perfect time. The aspen trees were all turning yellow, and apparently it's only like 3 weeks you get for that. And we were there at the ideal time. And of course, the elk were rutting and all of that, and the deer and everything. So it was really cool. I recommend September for anybody going to Colorado. It wasn't as crowded apparently too. So. Well,
I'll tell you, a good time of day as far as year with, you know, the whole weather. I mean, you're not going to get the snow as much yet and those kinds of things. So, good time.
Well,
glad you came.
Let's bring our guest on, speaking of Colorado.
Wonderful. This is somebody who currently lives in Colorado, but used to live in your state, Glenn, there in Florida. Most people know Julie. She doesn't need an introduction, but I'm going to do it anyway. So those that don't, she is on RFD-TV. She's the host of Horse Master, and those currently air on Monday and Saturday night. She travels across the U.S. sharing her horsemanship training with riders of all disciplines: English, Western, dressage, trail riding. Classic Skills for a Natural Ride is what Julie will teach you in order to feel more comfortable with you and your horse. She understands the whys of horsemanship. She is certified through us here at CHA as a master level instructor and a clinician. And she is going to be at our conference this fall. We are just thrilled to have her on the show today. Hello, Julie. How are you?
Wow. Good morning. Thank you. I almost fell asleep during that opening, but thank you.
Julie.
Glenn, I am so sorry I missed you guys when you were in Colorado. I, ironically, was in Florida kind of on a unplanned trip where we were hoping to get together, but... next time you come back, we'll do that.
It's taken 8 years for us to come out and see you, and then you end up about a half an hour from our house here in Florida.
But we were there filming the TV show at the beautiful Ground Oaks Resort there.
That's nice, isn't it?
It's just beautiful, and we had a great shoot, got some really good episodes. in the can, so to speak. So, and now I'm back in Colorado.
Yep.
And you're not.
Right, exactly. So now we're going to, and we did love your state, by the way. I can see why you live there. It's absolutely beautiful. It really is.
Yes, it is. Well, I grew up in Florida and, you know, certainly have some appreciation, especially for Central Florida horse country. But I've been in Colorado for 30 years now, and it kind of feels like home to me.
Well, I can see why. Although it's much easier to drive in Florida. The roads are a lot straighter and not so twisty, windy as where you live.
I don't know about that. You got all that rain and crazy people on the roads.
All right. You can have your show back there, Christy.
No problem. I was just sitting here thinking, well, either of you can beat me. I grew up in Southern California. I think we have probably the worst roads. And according to most of the country, the worst drivers. We're just very defensive.
I don't think either one of us is going to argue with that, actually.
No, probably not. I think the Los Angeles girl wins. All right. So moving on, now that I've won that debate. So, Julie, what else is going on there in Salida? Have you guys had your first snow yet or anything?
You know, Rich and I took a little vacation in August, at the end of August, and interestingly, we went to Florida. And when we got back on August 27th, there was the first snow in the mountains. So, yeah, we've had our first frost and all of that. It's definitely, you know, it's ironic that we still are a couple of days away from fall, but we're here in Colorado, we're in full fall mode. The colors are beautiful, and it's crisp and cold at night and a warm, sunny days. So it's a glorious time to be in Colorado. I've got a clinic in Colorado coming up this weekend up in northern Colorado at the Sea Lady U Ranch, which is a fabulous resort as well. And it's just always the best time of year to be in Colorado. So I try to stay in Colorado in September as much as I can.
I don't blame you. I always say I think spring and fall are definitely the two best seasons. It's just lovely.
Yep.
During both of those. Yeah, definitely. Well, I had so much fun, Julie, naming this show. It's called Counter Canter. It's Not the Wrong Lead. And I was very proud of myself about that, because how many times do we hear that, right? And we say wrong lead, and it's like, no, there's a thing called a counter canter, so it's not necessarily the wrong lead, depending on if your bend is correct.
Why do the judges never buy that one, by the way?
Because your bend is incorrect, Gwen. You have to have correct bend. So,
well,
Julie,
you know,
what is your definition of it?
There's that famous statement that's, you know, not just hundreds but thousands of years old, that says one man's counter canter is another man's, one man's wrong lead is another man's counter canter. So,
yes.
You know, I work a lot on my horses at the counter canter, and it is an intentional wrong lead, and it is quite difficult. It is very advanced, high-level horsemanship. I've got a high-level student, a professional rider that I'm working with on right now on a counter canter. And to me, counter canter is first and foremost an obedience exercise. And so at the time in a horse's training that you would be starting to do counter canter, going on the wrong lead on purpose, is very far into the horse's training, and he's already at the point where he's dead leaded, meaning he takes the correct lead every time you ask him to canter. He canters, he transitions well from the halt, from the walk. And you are sort of working on refinement of all of those skills. And then pretty soon, and what happened with my high-level student recently, I said, okay, now go ahead and ask for the counter canter. And the horse would not do it. No matter how hard she tried, the horse said, no, that's wrong. I know what's right. You've trained me well. I'm not going to do it that way. That's why it becomes an obedience exercise, because, you know, after you've drilled thousands of counter departures into the horse and he's learned his lead, you may well think he's taking the lead because you asked him to take it, but he may well think he's taking the lead because, for instance, the fence is right there. Or because, for instance, when you go that way around the arena, you always take that lead. So you don't really know if the horse is cueing from you which lead he should take, or if the horse has figured out his own method for discerning what the correct lead is. And in the case of this horse, it was that. She had it all figured out in her mind that the correct lead to take had to do with the direction you were going in the arena and the where the fence was. And so they had a little battle. Then she finally was able to get the horse on the counter canter for about 2 strides. And then the horse switched back to the correct lead. So the first obedience challenge is, can you get the horse to take an intentional wrong lead? And the second challenge is then, can you keep them on that wrong lead all the way around a big, wide, arcing circle? You don't want to make it any harder for him than you have to. And that's very difficult for the horse. So he doesn't want to do it, and he knows how to switch leads. So he just switches leads to what he knows to be the correct lead. So you can kind of see from all of that how, first and foremost, it's an obedience challenge.
Without a doubt. And you're right, because most of the time, by the time a horse is trained well enough that you can even attempt the counter canter, they've also done a lot of flying lead changes. So now they just keep going, excellent, I'll just keep flying back because you don't know what you're doing.
Well, one of my favorite uses beyond obedience, once you resolve these obedience issues with the horse, you can get them on the lead and keep them on the lead. Then your work there is sort of done in terms of obedience. And then the next challenge is the balance of all of that. But for me, I always work on counter leading up to flying lead changes, because the horse will be begging to do a flying lead change after a lap or two of counter canter. And you have to hold the horse in the counter canter. He's not going to do it himself. So the rider is positioned to hold the horse in that awkward lead with the arc to the outside of the circle. And so then you almost just end up releasing the horse into the correct lead, or releasing the horse into the flying lead change, if that makes sense.
It absolutely does. And that would be, yes, because then you're actually relieving the horse, and the horse is going, oh, this is good. And I understand now that when I fly back onto this, then, yeah, that's a great idea to do that, to pick up a flying lead change, mm-hmm. Julie.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Yeah,
why would somebody want to counter canter? What would be the purpose? Like, why would somebody even want to do that?
Well, it is, you know, we reach this level of horsemanship that in CHA we would consider a level 4 rider. And it's really easy to plateau at that level and not continue to challenge and grow as a rider or as a trainer. But, you know, to me, it is a mandatory part of the progression of the training of any horse that is training to the quote-unquote finished level, which would be the highest level of training in that discipline. You have to be able to control every square inch of that horse's body, and you have to be able to manipulate that horse's mind as well. And so the counter canter is just a part of that. So it's first and foremost obedience. Secondly, we do a lot of working on balance. Of course, counter arcing at the trot is no different. It's just that the canter, you know, canter is the only gate that the footfalls change when the horse changes direction. So it changes lead at the trot. We change directions all the time. The footfalls never change. So at the trot, we might do counter arcing as well, circles in a counter arc. just to help with, again, with obedience and balance and body control. Maybe we're getting the horse working on improving a particular maneuver that requires the horse's shoulder to be engaged a little bit more, you know, whatever. There's any number of reasons, but to me, counter-counter is a mandatory part of the progression of training of a horse. Once you've mastered the correct lead, then you got to master the counter-counter.
Absolutely. And so do you recommend that there's a lot of walk and trot work prior? What are some specific exercises that you like to see people do? I know you mentioned the arcing on a trot, the counter arc. What are some other exercises that you like to see folks do to prepare?
To prepare for counter-counter?
Correct, yes.
Well, you know, everything is, because counter-counter is a fairly high-level skill in the horse, therefore in the rider, I guess, too. It's a very high-level skill in the rider, because, I mean, think how long it takes us with a riding student from the very first time they canter to have them be able to do figure eight at the canter with simple lead changes and collection and arcing and a walk to canter or halt to canter transition. That is a very long road from the first canter to there. And that's the point at which we would start working on counter canter. Because if you're working on it before, then you probably are just on the wrong lead, right?
Right.
So it's a high level skill. So everything that we do is in preparation for that. But if I'm asking a student to counter canter, they already are pretty dead leaded. They have excellent walk to canter transitions. They are cantering nice and slow and collected and in control and can do circles and turns and stops and whatever you ask them to do. That's when I all of a sudden the little flags start raising in my head. I wonder if it's the rider or the horse that's making that decision on the lead. So I'll have them come down the center line. Walk down the center line, and once they're straight and headed in one direction, I'll say, okay, go ahead and pick up a right lead for me. I'll see if they can do that. Okay, good, stop. Go ahead and pick up a left lead for me. Okay, good, stop. All right, now go to the rail and walk and track right. And so then when they're tracking right, I'll say, okay, go ahead and pick up the left lead. And that's the moment of truth. Because probably 9 out of 10 of those horses that I just described, the horse won't pick up the left lead. So then we start, working on, okay, we've unearthed the truth. The horse is taking the lead because he thinks it's the lead. He's not listening to the rider. So then we just start progressing through the counter-canter until... step one, got to get the horse on that lead. Step two, got to hold him on that lead. Step three, got to be able to complete circles. So that's it. Once, and usually with my student recently, once we unearthed that truth, it was like, okay, actually I got on the horse and argued with her a little bit about whether or not she should take that lead. And then she finally took the lead and we argued a little bit about whether or not she should stay on that lead. And she finally did, so we're so okay. Now you know your homework. Go home and work on this. You should be able to take any lead anywhere, anytime. The horse doesn't. The horse shouldn't be making that decision on his own.
So I have a question for you. If I have a really long arena and I go down center line, okay, so I want to go ahead and go straight and not worry about necessarily which lead, just pick up a lead. Okay, so now I'm picking up, let's say, right lead, and I decide, instead of turning right when I get to the center of the arena, I'm going to go ahead and turn left and stay on this same lead. Is that a way maybe to start without the rail getting in the way of the horse?
No.
No, okay, tell us why.
I'll tell you why, because it's going to be way too sharp a turn. So we do not want to make it hard for the horse. So when it can't, so counter in an arena implies you're going to be making turns. No matter how big the arena is, at some point you're going to get to the end of it and have to make a turn. So it is hard for the horse. So we want to make that turn as big and wide and sweeping and easy as possible. So you want to make counter canter as easy as possible for the horse. And because what we're asking to do goes against his nature. First and foremost, he's going, why in the world is she asking me to do this when I could do it the other way and it would make so much more sense? So you don't want to start the counter canter. I'm always real careful about where I start it in the arena because I want to make sure I have a straight line as long as possible and can bring my horse onto the widest, gentlest turn so that because that'll be the big challenge. It's not that hard to hold him on the straightaway because it's just it really doesn't matter on the straightaway. So start with widest possible turns, and even though it's kind of a funny thing because I say, you know, make it as easy as possible, of course, yes, it's an obedience exercise. Well, it's an obedience exercise because he has to listen to you and do what you ask, even if it doesn't make sense to him. But that doesn't mean we want to make it hard for him. We always want to make the right answer as easy as possible for the horse, and including in the counter canter.
That makes sense, because I was just thinking people might think, well, go down quarter line, quarter of the arena, or go down center line and then do it. But yes, that turn, when you get to where you're going to make the turn, will be very rough.
Also, keep in mind, in the case of that finish horse I just described, high-level rider, high-level horse, that I had come down the center line, she could take either lead down the center line. It's because the horse couldn't gauge. The fence was not a factor in his thinking. When we brought the horse to the rail, he would not take that lead because the fence became a factor in the horse's thinking. And so to fix that, you're going to have to be able to get the counter-canter on the rail because that's the part of the horse's thinking that you have to change.
Right. And
sense.
It's actually pretty amazing. Oh, absolutely. And I'll tell you, that's why I think horses are amazing. You're in the show pen and they hear the click and they know darn well that that microphone click means the next gate. Right.
Yes or no.
And how many times do they do that? Uh-huh. So it's the same kind of thing with what you're describing.
I remember one time as a youth rider, I was showing in equitation and it was on the flat. It was a hunter rider. And my horse was that way. He knew everything there was to know about a horse show. And it was time to canter, and the microphone clicked on, and my horse started cantering, and the announcer said, "There's a white Chevy pickup in the parking lot with the lights on." And I was cantering around the arena, and no one else was.
Yeah, sometimes it works out to the disadvantage. They are so incredibly smart. So, Julie, we are so excited that you are going to be a keynoter at our conference coming up. You've been to so many CHA conferences now at this point. Could you share maybe some of your past experiences at conference and some things that you think are good for people to come and attend?
Well, you know, as soon as you mentioned the conference, I was gathering my thoughts, and I was thinking to myself, I'm really excited about this conference this year. And then I was thinking to myself, how could I say that after having gone to, I don't know how many, more than 15 probably. But I guess I'm excited about it every year. For one thing for me is I get to see a lot of really good friends and colleagues. And for me personally, it's a chance to intermingle and visit with all kinds of professionals from the industry, and you know, share our commonalities of our careers and the interest in the differences too. You know, for instance, a lot of a lot of people that come to the conference might be arena instructors. Maybe they work for a college. Maybe they whatever work at some kind of riding program. And others might be pack and trail and talking about, you know, their wilderness adventures and totally different venues, totally different equipment, totally different horses, totally different way of riding. So those differences are really fun for us as professionals to explore. You know, wow, look how they do that. You know, isn't that interesting? So there's that kind of sharing that goes on as well. This year, I'm particularly excited because we've really got some great speakers, some people that I really look up to, and I'm interested to hear speak. Tom Wentz is coming. He's one of the, you know, top leaders in the equine industry, both in the United States and at large. And it's fun for me. I'm coming to Tennessee. I'm actually going to be in Tennessee a lot this coming year. Sometimes how my schedule works out that way. I go to one place and then I go there again and then I go there again. But so I'm doing an expo there in Tennessee as well. So later next year. So anyway, so I'm really excited about the conference, and it's coming up quick.
Yeah, so we're so excited to have you there. You're going to be doing two different presentations for us. Do you want to go ahead and explain to people what you'll be doing in those talks?
Well, yes, if you'll remind me of the titles. And I remember the keynote because I've been working on that. But I do a lot of presentations, and this time of year I'm presenting a lot of presentation titles to expo producers. So I'm sorry if I've forgotten the arena one. You'll have to remind me.
No worries. Yeah, the arena one was going to be where you're going to talk about kind of the different levels and how we kind of combine them all and what we do with that. Like if you're teaching, you know, one type of person and you're working up to another because the whole group environment. And then, of course, your keynote we're thrilled about because it goes directly to the funny things that all of us equine professionals have that cause us daily strife.
Yeah, so that's what I've been thinking about on a daily basis. But yeah, so the arena one, and that's sort of my way of teaching. And I say my meaning as a clinician, I generally work in large groups with large groups of riders of all different ability levels on a one-time basis. So it's sort of evaluating what you see, trying to pick what you can and move on. And so we're going to look at teaching the same skills to all different levels of riders, from a beginner level up to the highest level, and how you can challenge riders at different levels at the same time on the same skill. So that'll be fun. And then the keynote is, it's just going to be looking at the universal truths that us horse trainers and riding instructors and horse professionals live with every day.
Well, Julie, we're thrilled to have you. And then I get to have some face-to-face time with you, too, because I'll tell you, even though we live in Colorado, we never see each other, Glenn. It's just sad. So we get to go to international conference every year to see each other. So that'll be fun to be able to see you, my friend. How do folks find you, Julie, all the numerous ways if they're so excited after listening to this and they want to find out more?
Well, sure. So juliegoodnight.com is my main website that gets you anywhere you need to go. Also, you know, we've been focusing a lot in the last few years on developing online resources for horse people and riders. And so we have amassed an incredible collection of videos, articles, and audios. And it's all searchable by keywords and content, so it's a really great resource. We have some resources that are available at the free level. You do have to register even at the free level to get access to the resources, and then all of the resources are available
by paid subscription, and that's really been a great resource for people and really successful. We add new content pretty much on a daily basis, so there's literally hundreds are coming up to four digits in the videos we have, short and long, and all kinds of content for people to utilize. Kind of the wave of the future, as we see it in the horse business, is giving people access to information when they need it. So we're excited about that. That's juliegoodnight.com, and you can find out about that there.
Great. Well, thank you so much today for talking about Counter Canter. It's one of those topics that Glenn actually said had never, ever been on the radio
show
before.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever talked about it.
About that.
Yeah, thanks, Julie.
All right. Well, that's impressive. So if you think of another subject we haven't talked about, let me know. I'd love to do it again.
All right. Thanks, Julie.
Great.
And we'll be out to visit you sometime in the next 8 years, okay?
I hope so. And I promise to be home.
Okay, good. Thanks a bunch.
Bye-bye.
She's so nice. She comes on anytime we ask her to here on the shows. And I know, you know, she's obviously a big supporter of the CHA, but she's been so good to us here at the Horse Radio Network, too.
Yeah, she's our international spokesperson. You know, we have this really important factor that we don't grandfather anybody in order to be a clinician for us or even be certified by us. You have to go through our process, and it is 40 hours worth of process to get your English and Western certification and 3 days of process to get your equine facility manager certification. So Julie, you know, went through the process and, of course, achieved our highest level and is now a master instructor and a clinician for us. So it's always a joy to have her share what we do and why we do it.
Very good. Well, let's take a break for our song. We're going to come back and talk about more of the wrong lead here in just a minute. But let's take a break for our song first. We'll be right back.
Complete.
Well, that was Fleur Magali. She is from Switzerland. She's a horse girl from Switzerland, and we appreciate her allowing us to play all of her music. You can find her at fleurmagali.com or on iTunes. Just search for her name, and that'll bring up all of her music. She's a lot of fun. We've had a conversation or two with her. We're hoping to do a special musical episode with her as well, because she grew up in the Swiss Alps, and she has lots of stories to tell about the town that she grew up in, which is really cool. And they most of them speak English over there, so it's easy to have chats with them, and she sings songs in Swiss and English, but mostly in English. We have our next guest ready for you.
Wonderful. This next guest up is Lori Hall McNary, and Lori Hall McNary I met actually, she's a fellow Southern Californian, so I met her after I started working for CHA, but she owns Rocking L&D Ranch in Escondido, California, down south by San Diego. She is currently a California Gymkhana Association judge, so Gymkhana being the games like pole bending, barrel racing, keyhole, all those wonderful things. She is also EGALA certified. She is a clinician for us, and she is also, of course, a certified instructor. So, Lori, it is so great to have you on the show today. How are you?
Fabulous. Thank you so much for having me.
So how is the fabulous weather in Escondido, California? What's going on there today?
Oh, my gosh. It is so hot. I am so tired of the 95-degree weather. I will tell you, I am ready for fall. My horses are getting their winter coats, and they're like, oh, please, could we not work today?
When do you think your fall weather will finally hit in down there?
Maybe in December, January. We have good winter, you know.
I love it. You know, I have a little short story to share, Lori, and then we'll go ahead and get started on our topic. But I was married starting September 25th, 17 years ago. Our anniversary is coming up for John and I. And I was married right outside of Escondido down there on Coronado Island in San Diego. But we had to come up to Escondido to Miramar, to the Air Force base, to actually have our premarital counseling because John is in the military, was at the time. And so the gentleman that was going to be our minister happened to also be in the military, and he was based there at Miramar. So we got married counseled while the big bombers flew over us in practices.
Was that an ominous thing? Was that an ominous sign of things to come?
You know, I think it's okay. It's been 17 years.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
so
true.
I guess it was all right, actually. Yeah. It was all right. So
now,
I love your neck of the woods.
Escondido is right above San Diego, right?
Yeah, we're about, if you go by traffic, 1 hour or 30 minutes, depending on traffic.
And is it big horse country? Tell us a little bit. For those, we have listeners around the world who don't know anything about Escondido, so tell us a little bit about it. Is it horse country?
It used to be. I used to ride all over the place when I was a kid, and now it's totally built up. We have a little historic ranch that's left. We're the only one in the area. Our neighbors in San Marcos next door, now they are a lot big horse country. But Escondido has really shrunk, unfortunately. But, you know, the housing cost is so expensive and land is so expensive. So as generations come about, you know, they sell off.
You know, we grew up in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, and every time we saw a cornfield that got put into a development, we always said another cornfield shot to hell. yep. So kind of what you're seeing down there, too.
Lori, tell us a little bit about how you got started down the road of the Gymkhana and that kind of being one of your main focuses. How did that all come about?
I'm a third generation cowgirl, and so after getting my first horse, and my grandfather's my first trainer, and so it was like, get on the horse, buck him out, and then go down the road. And I'm like, okay, grandpa, there's not, you know, 1,000-acre fence line for me to do that with, but okay. And then I started going, we had a lot of ranches at the time, so I started going to other ranches to get training, and saw barrel racing. And I thought, wow, that is something really cool. And then I found out about the history that the Nez Perce Indians started it, stump racing. And so went to my first show and was hooked. And then, but I saw a lot of things that could have been done better, even as a 13-year-old. And I was like, I don't think I need a tie down. I don't think I need that. Why would they do that? And so that's kind of how we went down the road. And then my kids, when I had children, my boys were involved in it and became a certified judge. And then my students really like it because of both speed and skill and history. It has a lot of history with it because it comes, a lot of it comes from the military. So that's kind of how I started and been going ever since.
And Glenn and Jen, you'll appreciate this. We have a bunch of photos on our website, and we have this great shot of Lori, I think you're on Coco, your mare Coco, going around the barrel, yep, 100 miles an hour with her helmet on her head. Pretty impressive.
Yep, and that's, yeah, and that's one of the things, yeah, helmet, and
yay,
you know, we didn't used to wear helmets, and then we knew better. Yeah, so we, I'm a very much of an advocate for that because a lot of barrel racers don't wear helmets, but you know, I've also seen accidents that didn't need to happen.
You know, you'd think, too, with barrel racing, that would be one sport where you'd want to wear a helmet.
Yes, very much so, because you're, you know, going 40 miles an hour, slamming on the brakes.
And well, and you're usually heading toward a gate or a wall. I mean, you know, there's...
Right, exactly, a wall. 15 feet, that's 15 feet off the wall. I mean, that's close it can get. You know, it's 15 feet, and that wall comes up really, really fast.
Well, and then coming in and out of the in gate, a lot of times there's accidents heading out, you know, so it, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Do you see it, we just came off of International Helmet Awareness Day on Saturday. Do you see it changing at all? I mean, is it slowly changing, or do you feel like it's just not ever going to change?
Well, you know, because it's a lot of history, but a lot of people don't know why they wear cowboy hats, other than they look cool. But I think it is slowly changing. There's a great barrel racer that has a new line of helmets that are really stylish and colorful. And so Phelan on Baby Floor, she's really, I think, changing, you know, the way people see helmets. And she's a big advocate, and she's really good. So, and we've had some national or international riders, barrel racers that have worn helmets. So it's slowly changing.
That's Fallon Taylor you're talking about, right? Did you say Phelan? Is it Phelan,
yeah,
or Fallon?
You know, I guess it depends on what part of the country you're in.
But she has been. She has been one certainly
yep,
leading the way on the helmet side. And now we got Western helmets coming out that don't look like there's something out of the comic books. So I think that, that helps too. Yeah. All right.
So I know Jen and I saw each other over this past week because Glenn and Jen were visiting here in Colorado, and I mentioned that you were going to be on the show to Jen, and Jen, her first comment was, "Now, why in the world would a barrel racer want to be on the counter canter?" So we are thrilled to hear the Gymkhana perspective on why riders should bother with the counter canter. What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, they really should bother with it. And it's funny, I did a quick little survey here at our local Gymkhana show, because we just had one on 9/11, and they're like, "Oh, I don't really use that very often." And I'm watching the horses, and I go, "Yeah, I can tell." because, I mean, I know Julie talked about you gain greater body control of the horse, but the collection improves. And, you know, we spend a lot of time in the saddle. The ride is a lot smoother with the balanced horse. I have a lot of rescue horses that we put in our program, and they are rough. And so as far as a rough ride, so in the retraining and helping with the collection, it really helps them basically so they don't fall down around a barrel.
Yeah. Makes sense. So they stay upright so they can use both sides of their body evenly. I love that.
Yeah,
so
when
might it be useful to the horse and the rider? Could you give us some specific examples when it might be really useful to use it and why people want to educate themselves on it?
Well, it really, the horse really needs to think and pay attention to the rider, what is asking, because we're going at a high rate of speed. And the rider really needs to communicate better with the horse. And I'll give a for example. You know, plus it keeps the top line, more flexion in their neck, and a lot of confidence going around corners. That we had one of my advanced students who was used to riding winter high-level horses, and in fact, she just won a trophy saddle this year on her. So it's like time to move on. We put her on another horse, and they have similar body styles, but they are not similar in durability. And so she went around a single barrel. We're just working on turns, and she's on her left lead, and then I don't know what my rider was thinking. She cued the horse to go in a counter canter around a corner, and the horse fell to its knees. And I'm like, and then she you know, picked up his shoulders, picked it up. They were all fine. I'm like, what were you thinking? She goes, I forgot I was on a Rose. I'm on Lucy. Oops. And so I'm like, oh, we got a lot of work to do with this horse. And now the horse is doing a lot better, and she's actually going to start showing this year. But I was just thinking, wow, the horse is not strong enough, and you forgot what horse you were on. She is a teenager, so, you know, it happens.
That's good, though. I'll tell you, whenever we start thinking that we're really, really good, we either need to change the horse, change the discipline, change the breed of horse sometimes we ride, and oh, boy, we instantly get a wake-up call that maybe we're not so good after all.
Yeah, because she went from this Mustang, she went from a really well-trained Mustang to this little Connemara pony who was a jumper that we're training for Western. And yeah, it was a wake-up call, and now she has to pay attention, which is good.
That is good. So what are, in your opinion, Lori, before somebody ever tries to do a counter canter, which as Julie talked about and you have now too, it's such an advanced maneuver, what in your opinion are some specific things that they need to be able to do before you ever attempt it?
Well, as Julie said, I mean, the rider really needs to feel in their hips what lead they're on without, you know, looking down. And I think having an experienced instructor or trainer videotape them, the horse and the rider calls out what lead and change the leads, I think it's really helpful. They also, for my riders, because they ride lesson horses, they're not riding, for the most part, they're not riding their own horses, they're riding mine. Before they even attempt a counter canter, I like them, both horse and rider, to be able to perform smooth side passing, backing, pivots, understanding a flying lead change, because sometimes my horses will do flying lead changes and then change back just to see if the rider noticed on a straightaway. especially the Mustang. She likes to, she's a really good lesson horse because she really has the riders have to pay attention because she just messes with them because she can.
So what when you do that, then, like, do they need to, in your opinion, at the trot, are there any specific exercises that they can do before they work up to doing the counter canter? And then a canter, what do you want to see them do before they can work up to actually counter cantering?
So we do work at a walk and trot, because we never do the rodeo runs. That's only for shows. We keep them at a nice collected canter. And because a lot of people, they think in Gymkhana, oh, you're just going to go fast all the time. It's like, we have to have a slow and a whoa before we ever have a go. So that's something that we work on a lot. And again, it is only for real advanced because you can cue the horse incorrectly or not hold it. Some of the exercises that we do, and again, this is because of doing Gymkhana, are a little bit different than what Julie has her students do, because we actually use the corners. I'll give you, for example, we'll start off going down the straightaway. Let's say we're on our left lead, and I'll put out cones for visual, so that way, and about three strides before we get to a corner, we're going to ask them for the counter canter, and we're going to hold it for five strides, and then we're going to release them back. So we'll go left and then right around the corners, and then we'll release back to give the horse a break. And we'll do that at each four corners of the arena. That's the first one that I work on with my students. Again, these are my Gymkhana, my barrel racing students, because they need to be able to, that horse needs to stand up. It needs to have its shoulders stand up around those corners because, you know, we don't want it leaning. We don't want it to fall down. That would be bad. And so that's the first one we start out with.
Cones are great. Yeah, that's super because I'll tell you, the cones for a visual really do help, I think, the rider and the horse. And I love, you know, Julian, you had both mentioned that it is a high-level maneuver that's hard on the horse. So this way you're giving the horse a break. You're saying, all right, we're just going to counter canter from this point, and then I'm going to go ahead and swap you back over to the other lead and give you a chance to rest, and then we're going to do it again.
Right. And so then, and that way, like I said, the horse has a rest. One of the other ones that we also do, using this center, going down the center is... we do like an S exercise. So we utilize, you know, the center of the arena, starting either left or right, and then asking for the counter on the S arch, and then giving it back to him. So again, we're giving that relief to the horse, but we're also making sure we're precise as far as, you know, asking for the horse and holding it for just around the arches of the S. And then when they get really, really good, and this is when we're getting ready to put them in to start showing, is we do spirals. This one is very difficult because it's very difficult on the horse and also the thought process of the rider. So I use flat cones, like you see it, you know, the soccer kids' games. And what I do is I make a spiral track in the middle of the arena. And so we have them start their counter canter in the spiral and go down as far as they can hold it. And the horse, you know, is not giving them issues or swapping back to the other lead because we want them to be able to spiral down to a barrel pocket. And so, and then spiral back out. And then, of course, we do it on both sides. And that one is very... challenging, and so until the horse is strong enough and their top line strong enough and they have enough flexion, we don't use that until they're ready.
What a great one, though. Oh boy, everyone's going to be a little bit tired after that. Talk about opposite muscle memory.
And then we actually, and then after we're doing that, then we actually just, you know, take him out on the hill and just do some just walking. Just like, okay, clear your mind, clear everything. We just go back behind the barn and just walk him down the hill a little bit. We do a lot of trail riding in between because my horses, I don't want them to be hot ever. They walk in the arena. They know their job. They do it. They walk out. They're calm because there's a misconception that the horse is always crazy. It's because I feel people run them too much in between rodeo runs, and you know horses only have so much turns in them, and so we don't.
Lori? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Oh no. Go ahead. I was going to say I'm actually. We have other exercises, counter exercises, but other Gymkhana exercises. I'm actually working on a book, ABCs of Gymkhana, I'm hoping to have out next fall, that will have these exercises, explanations, the history of Gymkhana, and, you know, how to build that up and how to keep, because I have horses that, like Coco, that picture that you have at CHA, I showed her for 15 years at the top. So, you know, that says a lot. I think that these horses, you know, can be strong and have fun and not get burned out.
Absolutely. And for those listeners, Lori, that don't know a whole lot about Gymkhana, can you tell us some of the names of some of the events and what they are?
Okay. So probably the most common one that people know is barrel racing, which is also rodeo barrels. or they've also called them Texas barrels. And that came about from, like, the Nez Perce Indians. It's stump racing, that they're like, hey, instead of just going straight lines, you know, let's put out some tree stumps and do match races. And so, you know, some people saw that and say, hey, that looks pretty cool. Why don't we adapt that? And so it's a cloverleaf pattern. So if you go to the right barrel, then you're going to do two lefts, or you can go to the left and then two rights. Another one is poles, you call it poles two, Washington poles. And that's when you have six poles that are 21 feet apart and you run straight down, the pole line, and then you're going to weave. You actually shouldn't be weaving. You actually should be doing a straight line and doing flying lead changes, because the straightest line is the fastest time. And then you're going to weave back, and then you run straight back. There's you know, many events, because like the American Quarter Horse will have certain sanction events, different breeds will have certain sanction events, different organizations have certain sanquage, if I could say the word, sanction events. Like the California Gymkhana Association, we have 13. We have keyhole, and that's always fun if horses haven't seen white chalk. And it actually looks like an old-fashioned keyhole, and it's only 4 foot. It's like 4 foot by 10 foot, and then the keyhole is 20 foot. And you go in, and you want to do a sliding stop, roll back, and come back out, and not touch the lines, or else you're disqualified. So that's just a few of them. There's a lot of events that test both speed and skill. And, you know, I think it's good for the horse, no matter what discipline they do. I mean, we've had English riders that come in just because it's fun. You don't have to be the fastest. That's the other thing, is there's a lot of different levels. So you compete against your level. So if you just want to walk trot and do the events, you compete against the walk trot. So that's what makes it really, I think, fun for the whole family.
I agree. I'll tell you, I think it is so much fun, because much like we were talking about, just change your discipline, change your horse, and you get humbled. Change your Gymkhana event, and you get humbled. If all you're used to doing is bell racing, and all of a sudden you try pole bending, oh boy, it's a different fish to fry. Totally different.
Yep.
So it's so much fun to do those. I used to not like the flag race very much, where you have to run down, pick the flag up out of the little pot of sand on top of the barrel, then run over and put it in the other pot of sand on the other barrel, and then run home. That whole, like, maneuvering and using my outside leg to push the horse over close enough to be able to lean over and get, oh my gosh, at Mach 10. Yeah, no, that was a hard one.
Ooh. Yeah, the hand-eye coordinations, we have one that's it's called speedball, and it's a cone, and you run down and you have to put the ball in the cone. That's really, and when you're on a tall horse, it's really, really far away. And without dropping and if you drop the ball or knock over the cone, you're disqualified. And that one's a really good one for kids. The adults, so much, again, that going really fast, that hand-eye coordination, was never one of my favorites, I must say.
And how do people find out more about Gymkhana? Is there a good website that they can go to if they're interested in the sport and want to learn more about it?
I think the you know, California Gymkhana Association, if you go to their website, they have diagrams as far as the different events. They have measurements. They talk about it a little bit. I think that's probably, they're probably one of, not just because I live in California, but they're probably one of the better ones, because a lot of the events that they have are also sanctioned with the different breeds too.
Well, and I forgot to mention in your bio, Lori. Lori's also our Instructor of the Year. She was named that a few years back, and she's also our Southern California State Rep. So if you want to know anything more about CHA, about Gymkhana, about the counter canter, Lori, how do people find you? What's the best way to do that?
The best way is my website, which is rockinlnd.com. That's rockin without a Z, .com. I also have Facebook and Instagram, and from my website, you can go right on to Facebook or Instagram, just click on. I also might have a nonprofit, which is rockinldequineservices.org, and of course, you can find me on the CHA's instructors page.
Well, Lori, it was so good to talk to you today. Am I going to see you in Nashville in a month?
You sure are. I am coming to Tennessee, and I'm very excited about it.
I'm really excited. We're going to have to go down to, Broadway down there, and we're going to have to hear some country music being played and enjoy ourselves one of the evenings if we can get away.
Yeah, the Grand Ole Opry, I am going.
Yes. Good. Well, Lori, so good to have you on today. We so appreciate the information. I think that this is such an incredibly good maneuver for people to appreciate and know that it's a goal, because it certainly is a goal. It's not something that you're going to do immediately as a rider, but it's certainly something that your horse and you can look forward to doing as you grow and progress. So thank you again.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, there's something you've got to do, and I just looked it up. When you go to Nashville, it's something that we did the last time we were there, and we had a blast. It's called the Redneck Comedy Tour, and it's a bus. It's a bus that's exactly what you would picture for a redneck bus, and they take you around Nashville and tell you all about Nashville, but they kind of do it in a redneck comedy musical way. The guy we had
fun.
That led that tour was hilarious. He could play and sing, and he played and sang all the different artists he talked about as we drove around in this camouflage bus through Nashville. It was just the most fun thing we did. And I'm just looking, when you get Google reviews, to have a 4.9 out of 5 on Facebook and Google,
wow.
you know that's a good tour. It's a redneck bus comedy tour. It was hilarious. So if you get a chance...
Oh, that is good information.
Yeah, whenever you're going to Nashville, look that one up. You know what we did? We had a kind of a family reunion there with all my brothers and families. And we were at the hotel, and we just walked down, and there was a flyer in the lobby for this one. I said, let's go do it. So we called, and we got in that day. And it was one of the most fun things we did in Nashville. It really was.
Love it.
Redneck Comedy Bus Tour. Next time you guys are in Nashville, check it out. It's a lot of fun. Jennifer and I always seem to find the quirky things to do. So
that's good, though.
Yeah.
The unique off-the-wall thing.
I don't know how that happened.
Love it.
Yeah, I don't know. We did a tour. We're going to have the guy on. His name is Dave. We did a tour in the Rocky Mountains. We did an off-the-road tour, which was a super modified racing. What was it, Bronco, Jennifer? And he took us up over the rocks and through the mountains on this road that you're not going to get any average Jeep over. And that was a lot of fun. We had a great time doing that, too. So we're going to get Dave on. He used to be a radio guy and was a great storyteller. So we're going to get him on in the next week or so. We always try and find one unique character on every vacation. Jamie does that, and we try and do that, too. And we found this one. Last year, we had the guy who runs the Segway tours, and I think his name was Pancake or... Potato? I forget which. It was
Potato.
Pancake. Potato?
Pancake. It was Pancake.
It was Pancake. Potato was the guy who won Tevis. And so we had Pancake on last year. This year's the guy's name sort of normal. It's Dave. But we're going to get him on. If you look hard, you can find the character in every state.
That's right. Everyone has a story.
That's true. Everyone has a story. Well, now, are we going to talk to you before the conference next time, or is it after? What's the story?
Right before. Okay. No, it's actually funny. You're going to be talking to me right before I literally get on the airplane. I think we did the same thing last year.
I'm doing
a deja vu moment here. Yes. So I will be rushing out the door, but it'll be good.
All right, cool.
No problem. No pressure.
Well, we'll look forward to that. Of course, Christy is joining us the third Tuesday of every month. That's when you can find the CHA episodes. You can find all of the past ones if you just go to horsesinthemorning.com and search for Certified Horsemanship Association or CHA. I'll bring up dozens of them. And Christy, you can find all of your information at...
CHAinstructors.com.
CHAinstructors.com. And, we don't mention this very often, but if you want to search for a guest that's been on any of our shows, like if you want to go back and listen to past Julie Goodnight episodes that she's been on, just go to Horse Radio Network and search Julie Goodnight. It brings up all the past episodes that she's been on over the last 9 years, and she really has been coming on for that long. Or if you're not sure if somebody's been a guest or you want to just check out past episodes for a certain guest, just go search on Horse Radio Network. Use a search function. It works very well, and it'll bring up all the past episodes that they were on. That's the easiest way to do that if you're ever looking for a guest. And of course, you can listen to Horses in the Morning on our app. That's the Horse Radio Network app. Just search for Horse Radio Network on iTunes or iOS or Android on your phone or tablets, and you can bring up the Horse Radio Network app. That's how most people listen to our shows now, or any of the other 100 podcast players out there. I think that's about it. We'll be back tomorrow morning here with Jamie. And of course, remember, really bad ads this week. Get them in. We haven't had it for a couple weeks. Get them in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. This week's prize, or this month's prize, Christy, is a box of crap, the coveted box of crap from my closet. We've been to a couple of trade shows now, so my freebies and crap has added up. We're going to put it all in a box and ship it out to the winner. So get on Craigslist, check out your crappy ads, and send them to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Well, Christy, we'll talk to you again next month.
Yes, you will.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody. Talk to you again tomorrow morning here on Horses in the Morning.
Goodbye, everyone.
See you, Christy. Good show. I'm going to go out and counter canter in my cart. Which is what it looks like most of the time, by the way. So, I don't have to try hard.